doubling down on Bellevue gives them the opportunity to continue to tap the same talent pool while avoiding a little bit of that friction. So I think that's one thing. I think another is the symbolic message that it sends. And then a third is that they are still hiring
a lot. The symbolic message meaning the middle finger they're giving to Seattle.
Something like that.
Okay.
That's the symbol. Hey, welcome to the GeekWire podcast. I'm GeekWire editor Todd Bishop.
And I'm GeekWire co-founder John Cook.
I'm GeekWire's civic editor Monica Nicholsberg.
Big news from Amazon this week. I feel like we've spent half of the past 2 years tracking the geography of this company. HQ2 didn't really come together like we thought it would, but it seems like now there's kind of an HQ2 on the other side of Lake Washington here in the Seattle region. Monica, you broke this story. Explain it to me.
You're right. It's interesting in the wake of the HQ2 search that now all of a sudden any locational decision that Amazon makes is big news because we're just paying so much attention to the symbolic meaning behind these decisions. But to back up a little bit, the news this week is that Amazon is planning to relocate its worldwide operations team from Seattle to Bellevue, and that's going to amount to several thousand employees.
Do we know how many?
We don't know the exact number.
All right. That's what I want to track down because they have about 45,000 people in Seattle.
A little bit more. They're approaching 50 from what I understand.
So, you know, if it's 1,000 or 2,000, it's one thing. If it's 10 or 15,000, it's another.
What I was told from a very reliable source is several thousand. And they're going to be ramping up hiring in Bellevue as well. So it could go beyond that.
Yeah. And there is a bigger picture question here about, as you said, the transfer of knowledge and talent from the Seattle side to the Bellevue side, which is the bigger story.
So big picture here, Amazon has close to 50,000 people in Seattle. Why are they suddenly ramping up hiring in Bellevue, another municipality in the Seattle region, and moving this giant team over the next 5 years, 4 or 5 years essentially, to Bellevue? Why are they doing this?
So there are a few things that I think are going on here. One is just the bottom line. Amazon wants to continue recruiting tech talent from the Puget Sound region, where Seattle and Bellevue are both a part of. There's a ton of tech talent here, a lot of software engineers, data scientists, the kind of folks that Amazon really needs to power its business. But there has been some very high-profile friction between Amazon and Seattle officials over the past couple of years. And doubling down on Bellevue gives them the opportunity to continue to tap the same talent pool while avoiding a little bit of that friction. So I think that's one thing. I think another is the symbolic message that it sends. And then a third is that they are still hiring
a lot. The symbolic message meaning the middle finger they're giving to Seattle.
Something like that.
Okay.
That's the symbol?
Yes.
We could debate the symbol, but I think, you know, they put out a statement that said Bellevue's very business friendly.
Oh, they didn't say Seattle is not business friendly.
No, you have to read the tea leaves a little bit. Another reason that they are likely doing this is because they're still hiring for 10,000 positions in Seattle, and shifting a big team like this creates a little more breathing room in the Seattle campus for those new hires.
So is this an Amazon exodus then? Because I think that is what some people might think if they hear this news. Is Amazon basically doing the last person who drives over Lake Washington.
Where you go.
Turn off the lights.
Please turn out the lights on the bridge.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's a little too early to make that determination. Right now, Amazon has 700 employees in Bellevue and close to 50,000 in Seattle, as you said. So that's a pretty big discrepancy, even with this, you know, 1,000-plus person team moving over there. But I don't think this was in the original blueprint for Amazon's growth. You know, they had planned to occupy 30 floors of the Rainier Square Tower, and we had a story a few weeks ago that they're actually going to sublease that to another tenant. So at least to some degree, they are not growing as big in Seattle as they had planned.
They do own a big chunk of their campus in Seattle, so you can imagine they're not going to retreat from their South Lake Union campus, which they purchase outright from Vulcan. So they are somewhat rooted in Seattle, but I think you're right, Monica. A lot of the growth, the pulling back from the Rainier Tower building, all of that points to Bellevue is going to become a larger epicenter for Amazon.
Right. I don't think that this is about them contracting their Seattle campus to smaller than 50,000, but I think it's about the next chapter for Amazon. They want to grow to another 50,000. At least that's what they said when they were searching for a second headquarters. Now, all of those jobs aren't necessarily going to go to Bellevue now, but that's their ambition. So if they're going to double in size, the question is, where are they going to do that?
And this seems to have parallels to what we saw in New York and Queens, where, granted, there wasn't just a complete withdrawal. I mean, in Seattle, it's, as you're saying, not a complete withdrawal. But there in New York, they basically took a stand against the government and said, hey, we don't like what you're doing. We are going to take action based on the fact that we don't. And we're going to take our ball and go over here, basically.
Right. It is sort of a trend for Amazon. So New York was going to be one half of their second headquarters. The other half is Northern Virginia. And we started to hear a lot of the same complaints and concerns in New York that Amazon hears in Seattle about gentrification and housing and all of these other issues. And I think Amazon started to look at that and envision a future where they were having the same problems in New York that they've been having in Seattle and just said, we're not going to do it. So they do seem to kind of flex their muscle in location decisions.
Nashville actually plays into this to some extent as well, because the team we're talking about here is worldwide operations. And I know that they're having a big logistics and operations center in Nashville. What does this team do?
This is a pretty critical team at Amazon. It is the arm responsible for getting packages to your door. So this team oversees 175 fulfillment centers all over the world and the 250,000 employees who work in those fulfillment centers. And it also is responsible for overseeing their logistics and transportation infrastructure. So that's 40 Amazon-branded airplanes, it's thousands of delivery trucks, and it's new initiatives like the Delivery Service Partners Program, where Amazon allows people to start their own little delivery businesses under the Amazon umbrella.
It's interesting because for me, that is one of the areas where Amazon has been most innovative. If you look at their delivery and logistics, drones, I would even if it doesn't fall under this purview, I would think of things like the Amazon Fresh Pickup.
Automation and warehouses.
Exactly. And so in that way, it's even more significant than just jobs and the number of jobs, because this is a pretty significant portion of the brain trust. I mean, these are the people who are figuring out some very complicated problems that can have big impact across the transportation industry, across logistics. It's a meaningful group.
Right. I think it is important to look at the specific group that they're moving. And that's what some of the chatter has been from experts when I've spoken with them. You know, one said that she would have been devastated if this team had moved out of the Seattle area because that's where all of the hot innovation is. And another said that Amazon was never going to move its crown jewel teams to the HQ2 cities. They were always going to keep those kind of close to home.
Interesting. Okay. So this happens over the course of several years.
5 years, yes. It should be done by 2023, the migration.
And it's essentially a campus. It's a few buildings near each other in downtown Bellevue. So in a lot of ways, it's similar to what the company has done in Seattle, although on a smaller scale. And one of the buildings is the Expedia headquarters tower in downtown Bellevue. And is Expedia, I would not be surprised if one day we wake up to the news that Expedia, well, I guess they can't now. They've got to come to Seattle.
They're giving over their towers?
I think they're doing a pretty major renovation on the former Amgen campus. Pretty big to backtrack from that. But remember when we were talking about that and we were talking about Amazon's plans a number of months ago and what they were going to do in Bellevue, we were talking about the Expedia building and we said, oh, wouldn't it be smart if they put the Amazon division that handles all the travel-oriented aspects in that building, that they could recruit all the people that don't from Expedia that don't want to come over to the Seattle side.
Well,
so
that's exactly what they're doing. This team oversees travel.
And that's, this team is on the – well, maybe you're saying directly. I was thinking it's more on the periphery of that, but you're saying it's more
– it's transportation and travel logistics.
Okay. So – but I think John's thinking in part of maybe travel agencies. Because
more
there's always
consumer
been,
travel.
Right. There's always been that discussion of Amazon getting into those areas. And I think to – have they – gotten into that area at all? I actually haven't followed that. There's always been reports of their interest in that area, but I don't know that they've gone full bore in terms of taking on Expedia and all those.
I think it is important that you bring up poaching, though, because I chatted with an economist who said that this team is suddenly going to be more vulnerable, or at least vulnerable to a different kind of poaching, because what she said was it's really difficult to get workers to move cities, to convince them to uproot their families and move. But once they've done that, then it's really easy to poach them. So companies on the East Side right now that want some of the Amazon workers may not be able to get them to move from Seattle. But if they move with their team, all of a sudden they're already on the East Side and maybe some offers look more attractive.
Yeah, or, it's 7 miles. You know, it's not that big of a deal. It's one thing if you're moving
cities.
I don't
know. My fiance commutes to Bellevue by bus every day right now, and it is a
I know it stinks.
He is poachable.
But if you have your Amazon stock and you are sitting on top of a gold mine, I think you're going to ride it out and ride out the commute for at least a year or two.
John, I'm glad you brought this up. I've been meaning to talk to you about our new East Side Bureau. You're starting there on Monday. You're going to be making the trip over the lake every day, and I expect you to be there by 8:30 a.m. You gonna do it?
Great assignment.
Yeah. Hey, back to your roots.
I'll go over by the Burgermaster. Yeah.
Burgermaster makes
it in almost every podcast. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it's as if they're sponsoring, which they're not, although they're welcome to if they'd like to bring over the burgers.
That's right.
I'm with Monica on this. That commute is one of the worst commutes I've ever tried to do, just in terms of driving
suck.
Over there.
No, I did it for several years.
It would absolutely affect my choice of job. John,
if you already have a place at Amazon and now you're going to go to Bellevue and you live in Capitol Hill or West Seattle, I think you're going to probably ride it out for...
Right. And Monica's saying once you got over there, though, maybe the barrier to getting to another East Side company will be less because you're already making the commute. You see what it is. But
it works the other way, too, that Amazon might be able to now recruit a base of talent from the East Side
from
that it
Microsoft.
Wasn't, or other companies in the area that
yeah,
it wasn't
absolutely.
Able to in the
and
past.
I think that's part of the motivation as well.
Yeah, and also maybe Expedia, when it does actually move to the waterfront, could poach the Amazon employees who would otherwise be going to the East Side.
They can just trade.
And well, and there is enough movement within Amazon that so many people that I know there are constantly moving from teams
right.
and groups that if you're a smart enough, high enough achiever there and you want to move off the operations team to Prime or AWS, they're probably going to find a role for you to be in Seattle if you're that great of an engineer. So I think they would probably figure this out.
All right. So the news this past week was that Amazon plans to move its Seattle-based worldwide operations group from downtown Seattle, from the South Lake Union area, to Bellevue, Washington, the other side of Lake Washington. Just another example of how Amazon is shifting things around and really making it clear that its future growth is going to be someplace outside of its current hometown. Is that fair?
You could make a case to that effect, yeah. I think it might be a little strong. I think their future growth is everywhere, but they are not as bullish on their hometown as they once were.
And I think this is a big story. I think this plays into the whole HQ2 discussion, which we had for over a year. And I think there is a major awakening that is going to occur here in Seattle as it relates to Amazon's movement. And we're going to see it play out in the political environment here later this year with the city of Seattle city council race, which I know Monica is going to be covering with a lot of turnover, with a lot of seats there, to see what the future of the city is really going to be about. And this move by Amazon plays into that discussion.
Okay, so specifically, there's been a backlash against the tech industry in Seattle. Are you saying that the backlash has gone too far and that when people see the negative impact of a company like Amazon moving jobs elsewhere, they'll reconsider their staunch proposal?
I am not smart enough to be a political analyst to know which way the winds are going.
We got Monica here, though.
But I do think it is going – well, Monica and I were talking about this the other day. We're in agreement that it's going to have impact. We just don't know which way it's going to shift the political landscape. Is that a correct read of it? Or maybe you have more insight on whether you actually think it's going to push more people into the kind of pro-business, pro-growth camp of Seattle or the progressive anti-business – anti-growth camp of Seattle.
I think it's both. I think what this really is a polarizing issue that it's driving a wedge increasingly between the kind of left-leaning, like very progressive arm of Seattle and the more business-friendly side of Seattle that's concerned about these kinds of decisions. I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that Amazon shifting thousands of jobs to Bellevue is going to be a bad thing for Seattle. It's pretty crowded here. I think there are a lot of people who think, you know, releasing the valve will be a good thing. But I do think that it's increasing the division between these two groups.
Interesting. Okay. Check out all of Monica's coverage, including the reactions from officials in Bellevue and Seattle. and all of that at geekwire.com. We will be right back with the latest from Howard Schultz, who got himself into just some hot water, you could say, with some text messages this past week. You're listening to GeekWire, and we'll be right back.
What a tease.
Yeah, really. It sounds like he was sexting.
It does.
Technology moves fast. I need to move faster. WGU's competency-based education puts me in control of how fast I move through my IT degree program. I can accelerate my program by applying what I already know to my courses and focusing on the things I need to learn. Earn a respected accredited degree that propels your career in the IT field. Learn more at wgu.edu/IT certs included.
Welcome back to the GeekWire podcast. It's Todd Bishop with John Cook and Monica Nicholsberg. Monica, I've been following the Howard Schultz potential presidential campaign, former CEO of Starbucks, with a lot of interest because I've had interactions with Howard Schultz.
And you did a story on this, a rare Todd Bishop byline.
Yeah. Oh, was this my story?
No, this one was mine, but yeah. You did one last
week. On the Instagram.
That's right. That's right.
The job listings.
The job listings. That's right, where Howard Schultz is building up his tech team in the latest sign that he's actually planning to run for president. But I actually ran across this story too, but you reported it out and actually made it a story. Howard Schultz is being sued on allegations, this is only allegations at this point, that his team sent illegal, unsolicited text messages to voters in alleged violation of federal law. This one is fascinating to me because Howard Schultz has been out there promoting his book, and it's sort of doubling as sort of priming the pump for his presidential campaign. And it's not entirely clear when he does these public appearances, is he promoting the book? Is he laying out his agenda for his potential presidential campaign? He's in a very gray area right now in terms of his status. The thing is, if he had actually declared his status as a presidential candidate at this point, it would be completely clear that the text messages that they sent would be perfectly fine because political candidates are exempt from these laws. And yet, because really what he's doing is promoting his book right now, he's subject to the same commercial regulations for text messages in terms of the anti-spam law. And so this Florida woman, who's clearly somebody who might be acting on behalf. Explain this for me, Monica.
Well, you've done a good job getting us started. This woman is a voter in Florida. She has filed a similar lawsuit in the past, and she's on the do not call list. And so it's only two lawsuits. I read it as somebody who just really wants the do not call list to apply. She is tired of getting unsolicited messages. But anyway, she filed suit against Schultz's team for these texts.
And Howard Schultz specifically.
Howard Schultz whoever is working on his behalf.
Right. And we assume that it was sent by his team, that Howard's not sitting there on his BlackBerry.
Sure, he could be.
Texting every voter in Florida.
Yeah. Anyway, go ahead.
So these texts, they're pretty vague. I mean, they're about his events in Florida. The woman who filed the lawsuit is an undecided voter, so she feels like she was targeted for those purposes. But the texts just say, Howard Schultz will be speaking at this event, watch live, and a link to his website where his book can be published. So it's all kind of squishy. But I do think the most interesting thing about this is if he just said, I am running for president, this wouldn't be a lawsuit.
Right. Yeah. I want to be fair here, but it seems like Howard Schultz, I wonder sometimes what he's doing.
Like when news stories broke that he hadn't voted in many recent elections,
yeah.
And then he didn't vote in the election after that.
I just wonder.
Where's his head?
Yeah,
Howard, where's your head?
Yeah, Howard, wouldn't it have been smart to actually just declare and then run? Or is he promoting his book, you know?
Or promoting something else.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been smart to just have your assistant fill out the ballot?
You know, promoting this. And I guess, yeah. And it ties into this, either promoting his book or, in that regard, promoting this image.
Yeah.
You know, that I think he has to promote this image that he's in the mix and very smart. And I don't know. It's odd. But one thing I do get a kick out of is always reading the complaints.
Yes.
In this instance, I just want to read a component of it. It says Valianos was harmed and others in the form of annoyance, nuisance, and invasion of privacy, and disturbed Valiano's use and enjoyment of her cellular phone, in addition to the wear and tear on the phone's hardware, including the phone's battery and the consumption of memory on the phone. One text message?
That is really? My favorite part of the legal complaint.
Really? It caused that much harm to her?
Yeah,
wow.
I mean, in a complaint, you have to identify any possible harm that there might
damage.
Be.
Yeah. Damage.
Possible phone battery damage based on one text message arriving from Howard Schultz. I don't know. I just got to kick
out of that.
She
doesn't mess around.
Yeah.
She's not leaving anything on the table.
All right. Well, we'll see where this goes. They didn't officially comment.
No, they haven't responded.
Yeah. Okay. All right. They have not responded to the complaint.
Right. Or to our request to comment.
Okay. All right. So I'll link to that from the show notes on this episode. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, we will reveal the finalists for the 2019 GeekWire Awards. I am just nailing the teases this week, I got to say. We'll be right back on GeekWire. All right, welcome back. John, big milestone. The GeekWire Awards nominations have been finished and the finalists have been selected. And now it's time to actually vote for the winners.
Absolutely. And Todd, I know you love the awards as much as I do.
Yes,
I love
absolutely.
Convening the community to have this great discussion and event to celebrate the best of the best of the Pacific Northwest tech community. And we've got some great finalists this year, spanning everything from companies that are trying to come up with treatments for Alzheimer's disease to developing software for undersea robots to new AI software. It is a great field.
Preach it.
Yes. So we have 11 categories, everything from Next Tech Titan to Startup CEO of the Year to Startup of the Year. And we're going to see who takes home the prize on May 2nd across those award categories.
I know we've done this event quite a bit, but there are some things that are different this year, right?
Absolutely. We've added a couple of new awards. We've added a Health Innovation of the Year award and an AI Innovation of the Year award. So we're going into two new areas there. And I think in an interesting twist, we've split the CEO of the Year category with Big Tech CEO of the Year. That's companies of 200 employees or more, and Startup CEO of the Year. And have got a great field. And if you want to come and join us, go to geekwire.com/awards and get your tickets soon.
And
we sell out every year.
And we'll be rolling out the categories for voting. Although another change this year is that you're able to vote on a full ballot. You don't have to vote on individual categories as they roll out. One vote per person. But you can do that at geekwire.com/awards. We'll link to the ballot and to the categories as they're rolling out. This is a fun event. Do you have one favorite category that you want to talk about, John?
I always enjoy Next Tech Titan.
What does that mean?
Well, these are the companies that are possibly poised to become the next behemoths of the Pacific Northwest tech industry. So in the past, we've had companies such as Smartsheet win this award, which has gone on to go public and employs several thousand employees at this point. But this year, our finalists include Adaptive Biotechnology, so representing the life sciences and health arena, a very strong biotech company that has a deep partnership with Microsoft. Remitly, which is the payments company, they are growing like gangbusters. Stay Alfred from the Spokane Valley, first time ever we could have a company from Spokane win in the Next Tech Titan category in the GeekWire Awards. So everyone in Spokane who's listening, make sure to get out and vote.
Or as people on the other side of the Cascade say, the real East Side.
Yes.
Have you heard that one?
I have not.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've been corrected in the past.
Do people actually say that?
I've heard people. Hey, I've hung out at the Spokane Airport before.
Okay. Rover, which is the online pet sitting and pet walking service, is up for that award. And Flex, which is Carl Seabrick's company, which is doing a lot of cool stuff in the next day delivery and warehousing space. So it's a very competitive category, and we'll see who emerges on top of that one.
Good. I feel like I need to deliver on my tease that we're going to be revealing all of the winners.
We're revealing some finalists. There's one category. I don't think you want to sit here and go through all 11 categories.
So check it out at geekwire.com/awards. As we said, you can vote now on every single category, which is a new twist this year in the process. All right. So at this point, normally we would do the random channel, But I want to tease ahead to next week. John, you're not even aware of this. But we sat down. I'm going to be on vacation next week. Spoiler alert. But we sat down with several members of the newsroom, the people behind the bylines that you see on GeekWire, Monica, Kurt Schlosser, Taylor Soper, and we did an entire episode of the Random Channel. And let me tell you, it is so random. It is the most random channel we've ever done, and it's the entire episode.
It's really silly.
Yes. And not entirely relevant.
You could make the case it's not at all relevant, but it's very entertaining. You should listen to
it. Well, we hope so. So that'll be out next week. We will not have an official news podcast next week, but be sure to tune in for that, and we hope you enjoy it. Until next time, I'm Todd Bishop.
I'm John Cook.
I'm Monica Nicholsberg.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you next time. I'm out of here.
Get out.